Scripts from Trial Maturita Test, February 2013 issue. B2 Level, Test 1. Section 1, Listening. Part 1, A Teenager's Struggle. You will hear the true story of Jeff Malkin, who became a drug addict but didn't give up. For statements 1 to 7, choose the correct answer A, B, C, or D. There is always only one correct answer. Script 1. For much of my teenage life, I was addicted to drugs and alcohol. I'm 19 now, and I'm a recovered addict who counsels other teens. I began drinking alcohol when I was 13 years old, just out of curiosity. I grew up in Chile, where underage buying of alcohol was relatively easy. Nobody would ask for IDs in Chile, so it quickly caught on to be a trend with my friends to go out and drink. I always had the power to buy whatever type of liquor was at the corner supermarket. I really, really loved that. I started out drinking beer and cheap liquor, but eventually I developed a liking for good bourbon. By 14, I was downing hard liquor regularly. Every chance I got, I pretty much drank until I blacked out. When I was 15, I landed in the local police shack after a Chilean Independence Day celebration. I had too much to drink, and I woke up in the repository for drunks set up by the Chilean police. I was just surrounded. They would pile people on top of me, and I would go on top of somebody. It was so awful. The police also beat me. I was still drunk when my mother and grandmother came to pick me up. That didn't stop me from drinking, however. I started a routine of drinking heavily every night, but I was able to keep my parents in the dark about it. I was still living in Chile with my parents, who frequently threatened to divorce, when I discovered marijuana. When a close relative offered me a joint, I was initially reluctant to accept. Despite my drinking, I was a self-proclaimed just-say-no-to-drugs teenager. When I gave in and tried the pot, I was surprised that it had such a minor effect on my behaviour. When I was 17, I moved with my family to Miami, where getting drugs was a lot easier than in Chile. Over here, I kind of discovered that you could sort of order stuff, like pizza. One of the first friends I made was another teenager who lived down the street and sold marijuana. Eventually, I moved on to other drugs, including LSD and cocaine. Looking back, I say teens have a hard time avoiding drugs because they are so easy to come by. In my school alone, there's so many kids that sell, you know, and a lot of time they're friends of yours. It's a mistake for a lot of anti-drug campaigns geared to teens to portray drug dealers as looking like demons. When my cocaine use got out of hand, my girlfriend Amy became worried. I didn't think I had a problem. I thought cocaine was the most glamorous thing on the face of the planet. Amy and my parents tricked me into visiting a hospital. Once I was at the hospital, they had me kept in the detoxification unit. After several days in the hospital undergoing detox, I was sent to an adolescent treatment program. I was extremely angry at them for taking me away from my lifeline. I couldn't imagine a world without drugs. The way I saw it, I got a lot more out of a movie if I was on acid or drunk. To me, drugs were like the spice of life. I began to calm down when I joined Narcotics Anonymous. NA was extremely helpful because it enabled me to talk to others who could relate to my story. I also received a lot of support from my school and a teacher mentor. In my final year of high school, I spent time talking to other students about my experiences with addiction. I want my addiction and recovery to be a lesson to other kids who need to know how addiction can happen. It's remarkable how unaware addiction catches you. It's incredible how well everybody else sees it. You're the only one who doesn't. I know that I can't stop someone from using drugs or alcohol, but I hope my own story can sort of nudge them into a different direction and explain there's a different way of life. Nobody in my peer group did that for me. Things might have been different if someone had. Part 2. A Rolling Stone interview with Barack Obama. You will hear an interview with Barack Obama. For statements 8 to 13, decide whether the statements are true, A, false, B, or whether the information was not given, C. Script 2. Barack Obama wowed an audience at a fundraiser at the Apollo Theatre in New York back in January by singing the opening line from Al Green's classic, Let's Stay Together. A clip from the event immediately went viral, and it was soon released as a free ringtone. As it turns out, singing a bit of the tune was very much an impromptu decision, as Obama told Rolling Stone editor during an interview.
What TV shows or movies or music have you been enjoying?
I haven't had a chance to see a lot of movies lately. I think the last movie I saw was The Descendants, which was fun, because it was going home. I saw Clooney the other day, and I joked with him that those were all my old haunting grounds. It actually captured that part of Hawaii that's not just rainbows and sunsets.
What do you read regularly to keep you informed or provide you with perspectives beyond the inner circle of your advisors?
Other than Rolling Stone?
That goes without saying.
I don't watch a lot of TV news. I don't watch cable at all. I like The Daily Show, so sometimes if I'm home late at night, I'll catch snippets of that. I spend a lot of time just reading reports, studies, briefing books, intelligence assessments.
Newspapers?
I'll thumb through all the major papers in the morning. I'll read The Times and Wall Street Journal and Washington Post just to catch up. The New Yorker and The Atlantic do terrific work. Every once in a while I sneak a novel or a non-fiction book.
I thought you were going to say Playboy.
No!
Most people, when you ask them to sing in public, get kind of nervous about it. They don't really want to do it. But you got up there at the Apollo Theater and nailed Al Green. What was going through your head when they asked you to do it? Did you know you were going to nail it?
The truth is, here's exactly what happened. It was my fifth event of the day. It's about 10:30 at night and we go up to the Apollo. I wanted to hear Al Green. The guys who were working the soundboard in the back, a couple of real good guys, they say, "Ah, man, you miss the Reverend." But he was terrific. He was in rare form. So I was frustrated by that. Since I was on my fifth event and had been yakking away for several hours on all kinds of policy stuff, I just kind of broke into a rendition of Let's Stay Together. And they're like, "Ah, so you can sing, man. You should do that on stage." My senior advisor was with us, and she was like, with my ears slashing motion, "No, no, no." I said, "Yeah, I'll do that. You don't think I can do that on stage?" I looked at the press secretary, and he was tired too, and he said, "Yeah, go for it." So I went up there and we did it. The only problem with my Apollo performance is that everywhere I go now, somebody wants me to sing. Part 3. Dreaming of a job in the USA. You will hear 6 practical tips about how to find work in the USA. Listen to the 6 pieces of advice. Below you can read summaries of this information, 14 to 20, but in the wrong order. Indicate the order in which you hear the information by writing numbers 1 to 6 next to the number that represents that information. Be careful, there is one extra summary. Put X next to the number that represents extra information. Script 3.
Number 1. Study hard, no matter what field you're in. Some professions have better chances than others. If you are or are going to be a computer engineer or computer specialist, it might be easier for you than for a medical doctor who would have to study at an American university to take most of the classes over again. You may also consider becoming an international student, which gives you more opportunities. It's a much easier path. Number 2. Study English. Your writing skills are important when you present yourself in a letter. Your speech will make an impression over the phone. Your accent should not be an issue, but you have to be fluent and well understood. Don't forget about differences between British and American English. It will still take a while for you to adjust to the way American people talk. Another difficulty could be for you to understand fast American speech. You might try watching American movies in their original English language and cover subtitles at the bottom of your TV screen. Number 3. Search the internet for a job and reply promptly to any interesting offer. You may create your own web page where you describe yourself, the field of your profession, experience, and your top qualities. Don't forget, it's very competitive out there. You must be good and present yourself this way. Number 4. Have your resume and the official translations of all your documents ready. Let a certified English translator at home translate your university diplomas, high school final report, and other certificates that show your educational level. Ask at least 3 people who know your professional qualities well to write a letter of recommendation. If they do not speak English, let them write in their native language and again get official translations to English. Number 5. The biggest problem of all will be your immigration status. You will need to find an employer who will apply for your work permit. It is better to find someone like that prior to your entry to the USA. Otherwise, as a visitor, you may spend a fortune while looking for a job. Number 6. Be prepared for good and bad. Don't be too idealistic. Be realistic. Before you get any job offer, you may be invited for an interview. An invitation for an interview is a good sign, but it does not mean you have the job yet. The first interview might be done over the phone. Your language skills should be good to make a good first impression. You might also be invited to a personal interview, which is more costly. However, the travel expenses are normally covered by the employer.